voice that has been cracking the last few days, so forgive me if I crack up. Reading from, again, chapter 2, verse 16. Yatato hyapi konteya. Yatato hyapi konteya. Purushasya vipaschita. Purushasya vipaschita. Indriyani pramatini.
Indriyani pramatini.
Indriyani pramatini.
Indriyani pramatini.
Haranti prasabhamana.
Haranti prasabhamana.
Haranti prasabhamana.
Haranti prasabhamana.
Yatato yapi kanteya.
Yatato yapi kanteya.
Purushasya vipaschita.
Purushasya vipaschita.
Indriyani pramatini.
Indriyani pramatini.
Haranti prasabhamana.
Haranti prasabhamana.
Yatato yapi kanteya.
Purushasya vipaschita. Indriyani pramatini.
Indriyani pramatini.
Haranti prasabhamana.
Please, someone else.
Yatato
yapi kanteya.
Purushasya vipaschita.
Indriyani pramatini.
Haranti prasabhamana.
Yatato yapi kanteya. Anyone else? Word for word. Yatata.
Yatata.
While endeavoring.
While endeavoring.
He.
He.
Certainly.
Api.
In spite of.
In spite of.
Kanteya.
Kanteya.
O son of Kunti.
O son of Kunti.
Purushasya.
Purushasya.
Of a man.
Of a man.
Vipaschita.
Vipaschita.
Full of discriminating knowledge.
Full of discriminating knowledge.
Indriyani.
Indriyani.
The senses.
The senses.
Pramatini.
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 Agitating. Haranti.
Throw.
Prasabham. By force.
Manaha.
The mind. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. Please repeat. The senses are so strong and impetuous.
The senses are so strong and impetuous.
O Arjuna.
Arjuna.
That they forcibly carry away the mind.
That they forcibly carry away the mind.
Even of a man of discrimination.
Even of a man of discrimination.
Who is endeavoring to control them.
Who is endeavoring to control them.
Report. There are many learned sages, philosophers, and transcendentalists who try to conquer the senses, but in spite of their endeavors, even the greatest of them sometimes fall victim to material sense enjoyment due to the agitated mind. Even Vishwamrita, a great sage and perfect yogi, was misled by Menaka into sex enjoyment. Although the yogi was endeavoring for sense control with severe types of penance and yoga practice. And of course, there are so many similar instances in the history of the world. Therefore, it is very difficult to control the mind and senses without being fully Krishna conscious. Without engaging the mind in Krishna, one cannot see such material engagements. A practical example is given by Sri Yamunacharya, a great saint and devotee, who says, Yad avidimam macheta Krishna padaravinde navanava rasa dam yudyatam rantumasi tad avidibhata nadi sangane smaryamani bhavati mukha vikara sushtu nishtivanancha. Since my mind has been engaged in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and I have been enjoying an ever new transcendental humor, whenever I think of sex life with a woman, my face at once turns from it and I spit at the thought. Krishna consciousness is such a transcendentally nice thing that automatically material enjoyment becomes distasteful. It is as if a hungry man had satisfied his hunger by a sufficient quantity of nutritious eatables. Maharaj Ambarish also conquered a great yogi, Durvasa Muni, simply because his mind was engaged in Krishna consciousness. Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindayor, Vichangshi Vai Kunta Gunanavara. Translation, the senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind, even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. First things first, I wanted to say that I'm here, you're here, deities are here, and this temple is here only because of the great personality to my right. And Srila Prabhupada has been called the supreme personality of servitor gotcha. By his example, we have the perfect example how to be a servant of Krishna. And I think it is very important to realize that Srila Prabhupada is still with us. The follower realizes that Srila Prabhupada is still here, guiding, and also underpinning. He's the foundation of all of our success. There's a concept called underwriting, which is sometimes used in financial circles, but it's used in a lot of ways. Underwriting comes from an old practice where a very great risk taker in the community would literally sign his name under the amount of risk he was willing to take. And we see now in Europe and with this problem with these international currencies, these countries are coming together and they're trying to underwrite the problem financially. But unlike their underwriting, in which they try to basically pass on the risk to their colleagues, Srila Prabhupada, he accepted all the risk. He came here to basically save the Western world, and because he knew that Indians tend to follow what happens in the West, in many cases, he came to save the whole world. And regardless of heart attacks and living alone. And so Srila Prabhupada is really the transcendental underwriter of this, of what we have here and of our own success. So we have a debt that can really never be repaid. It's ludicrous to even think it could be repaid because he has saved our souls. But in the infinitesimal attempt to do that, I'd like you to all join me in offering our obeisances to Srila Prabhupada right now. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
So here in this purport, Srila Prabhupada, he gives the example of this great sage and yogi, perfect yogi, he calls him Vishwamrita Muni, who underwent great austerities and penances, but because he was not a perfect bhakti yogi, it just took the jingling of the ankle bells of Menaki to draw him to break his meditation, and then it's described in other literatures that he was enjoying with her for 100 years with such, the enjoyment was so great that it passed like one night. And when he finally, I guess, came to his transcendental senses, he thought, well, now I'm going to do more penances than I ever have. So he again underwent even greater austerity than before. But then Lord Indra, as he is wont to do sometimes, he again sent a damsel to break his meditation. But this time Vishwamitra was a little more clever, and he knew what was happening, but he let anger take over. Instead of kama, krodha took over, and he burnt her to ashes, from what I understand. But by his anger, he again lost all the benefit of his tapasya. So, Srila Prabhupada is kind of brilliantly explaining the different levels and classes of transcendentalists in this purport. And making us understand that you cannot control... We cannot control the senses or the mind by will. We can try, but later in the Bhagavad Gita it says it is more difficult to do that than is more difficult than trying to control the wind. Sometimes you can harness a little piece of the wind with a wing. What do they call them?
Turbine.
But you can't stop the wind. You can't control the wind. The mind even harder. So then Prabhupada talks about Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya was a very great saint from South India who wrote literatures that were studied by Ramanujacharya, who was the great acharya of the Sri Sampradaya, one of the four bona fide Vaishnava Sampradayas. And then he made this statement, which sounds a bit, on the surface, intense, that he probably would sometimes say, and he spiked at the thought of sex life. But it's material sex life, separate from any concept of Krishna consciousness that he's turning away from. And the ultimate example, which Prabhupada gives, is Maharaj Ambarish. And it's interesting that Prabhupada is talking about the impetuous senses being very difficult to control, in Maharaj Ambarish's case, he's talking about that he was able to conquer a great yogi, Durvasa Muni, which is not the same as conquering one's senses. So what does this mean? Well, I believe Prabhupada is saying that by being fully Krishna conscious, we're protected, not just from sense enjoyment, but we're protected from everything. And Durvasa Muni, he also had a problem with anger. And you don't need to go through the whole story, but I think you know what happened. Maharaj Ambarish was undergoing a Ekadasi, severe fast for 12 months. He had to break the fast. At the very moment of us, when he came with a whole coterie of disciples, and he said, I'm going to take that. But the Brahmins who were advising Maharaj Ambarish said, you have to break the fast now, or your entire 12-month fast will be vanquished. And so they said, just take a little tulsi leaf and that will break the fast and not break the fast. So when Durvasa Muni finally came back after his leisurely bath, Ambarish said, so he admitted, I had to take a tulsi leaf, let us now take some prasad. But Durvasa Muni got extremely angry at him for even thinking of breaking the fast in some, what he felt was a duplicitous way. And he pulled a hair from his head and it became a demoness who was just about to attack Maharaj Ambarish. And at that very moment, Lord Vishnu's Sudarshan Chakra came and annihilated the demoness and then turned and looked right at Durvasa Muni, who took off and followed him for, I think, a year as he kept saying, Pahimam, Pahimam, protect me, and he went to Lord Shiva and was begging for his mercy, and Lord Shiva, I said, this is a problem you have to bring to Lord Vishnu. And he finally found Lord Vishnu, who said, sorry, I don't think he said sorry, but he said, when my Sudarshan Chakra, whose personality, Sri Sudarshan Chakra, when he leaves to kill someone, he will not return until that person is annihilated. So I have no control over this. And he turned away. And this was, finally Durvasa Muni developed a little humility because his life was soon to be over, and he begged what to do, and of course Vishnu said, you have to go to the lotus feet of Ambarish and beg his forgiveness. So he did, and when he went to Ambarish Maharaj with Sudarshan Chakra right here, he was surprised to find Ambarish Maharaj in the same place with his wife that he was a year earlier when he had left, ready to accept him. And he said, Pahimam, please protect me. And the Sudarshan didn't want to leave without doing his duty. And then Ambarish said to Sudarshan Chakra that if I have the same love for Durvasa Muni now as I had a year ago, then please leave. And Sudarshan Chakra left. So you can imagine the purity and the devotion and, of this miraculous person, Maharaj Ambarish, who had the same devotion after he was almost he was going to be hurt very badly by Durvasa Muni, but having the heart of a great Vaishnava, he didn't let that affect him. And this verse, Prabhupada quotes from the 7th canto, very famous, Savaimala Krishna Badavan Dayor, Chungsi Vaikuntha Gunana Varnane, it's an 8-line verse, which goes on and on about Ambarish Maharaj's amazing saintly qualities in how he used his legs to walk to the temple of the Lord, his eyes to see the deity of the Lord, his head to bow to the temple floor of the Lord. And so he is the ultimate example of pure Krishna consciousness. And as Prabhupada remarks, that is the only way to conquer over the senses, through the higher taste of Krishna consciousness, engaging one's senses, exactly like Amrish Maharaj, to experience the higher pleasure of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, it's simply impossible. So I was thinking that this is perfect purport, and because I am not perfect, or anywhere near that, I was thinking, or projecting onto others, that maybe people might think that this example is so perfect of Amrish Maharaj, but maybe it's an unattainable example. He is so great. His example is, after all, he is enshrined in the Bhagavatam for eternity. This is Leela. What do I do? If I'm having problems, or I understand the process is to follow as Ambarish Maharaj does, but maybe it's too unattainable. Maybe I have to move in steps somehow. And I was thinking, what really is the root cause behind the inability to control the senses? What's the root cause? I'm looking for something specific. I could ask you to give answers, but well, let's see if you hit on it. What is the absolute root cause of our, especially those we see on the streets outside, the non-devotees? Let's start with them. Why can't they control their senses? What is the root cause? What's the problem? Can anyone throw something at me? False identification of the body. Okay. That's a symptom of the cause I'm looking for. Anyone else?
Ignorance.
Well, you're real close there. What?
Lust? Desire to enjoy sexually?
I'd say that's also a symptom. But you got closest there. Prabhupada had many, many, many favorite verses. And also single lines of verses. This one, I think it was, some of them you could count how many times you could say it, I guess. This would be innumerable times. Nitevidu Svartikatim Hibishu. It's also from the seventh canto. It's the first line of a four-line verse. And he said that just so many times to explain the plight of the living entity. Nitevidu Svartikatim Hibishu. Nitevidu, they don't know. Sva artha katim, that their ultimate self-interest, their ultimate meaning of life, the goal of life, he certainly is Vishnu. Vishnu, and Prabhupada defines in that verse, it means Lord Vishnu and his abode. So, they don't know. They don't know there is a spiritual world. They just don't know. I mean, people don't know a lot of things, but this is just, it's an education problem. As you said, ignorance. It's just, I had this acquaintance up near where I live, John, don't even know his last name. He's a PhD in physics. And he just walks around the town in a shock of white hair. I think he's in his mid to late 60s. And he teaches, he tutors students. And I'll see him every so often, and then he'll open up a folder and he'll be very excited about some abstract, scientific abstract. And he shows me a different one each time, and he talks about the people in there who have all died, who've all passed away. And somehow he doesn't make a connection. Like, I naturally try to ease in the idea of what we're doing here, and he just won't have any part of it. And he keeps, I feel sad for him because he's so absorbed in this, and there's no interest whatsoever, and he doesn't know, and he doesn't really want to know. And then, like all of us, there will be a moment when he's at the point of death, and it will be a shock for him. Which Srila Prabhupada described as a physical metaphor once. He said, it's like if you're sawing a branch off a tree, but you've got the saw on the wrong side of the tree. In other words, the tree's here, you're sitting on the branch, and you're sawing here. And you keep sawing and sawing and living your life and sawing it away. And then at one point, of course, it cracks and it crashes down. And Prabhupada says that at that point they say, what is this? What is this? In other words, it's so obvious it's going to happen. But they still say, what is this? And so that is the real cause, in my view, the root cause of the problem is people have no concept of Vishnu or God or that there is a spiritual world. They hear about it sometimes, but it completely goes over their heads. And this is a very smart fellow. You know, I mean, we know the goal is Vishnu, and that we will have to reach full Krishna consciousness, we will have to, as Prabhupada says in the purport here, experience Krishna consciousness as a hungry man experiences a full meal. But how do we... how can we get closer to full Krishna consciousness very practically? I was thinking about this. I mean, how close are we to full Krishna consciousness? That we have to judge for ourselves. I think that can be analyzed in many ways. I was looking at two ways. First of all, right now it's Sunday. There are churches all over the place if they have afternoon services, and they are having a priest or that may be speaking, and those are called religion, the Baptist religion and the Catholic and and I think we have to make a discrimination in our own hearts are we involved in a religion, or are we involved in what Srila Prabhupada called this? Prabhupada called this, of course, the Hare Krishna movement. And I think the magic switch to get us quickly to Krishna consciousness is to analyze ourselves and see, am I in the movement or am I in the religion of Krishna consciousness? I don't know if this sounds radical or something, but I think it's an important distinction. Srila Prabhupada was in the movement. If you looked at Srila Prabhupada's letters, 9,000 plus letters, they had certain common elements to them. Besides, please accept my blessings and his signature at the end, there was always something in the left upper corner, and that was Camp Baroda, Camp Mumbai, Bombay back then, Camp New York, Camp Los Angeles. Srila Prabhupada approached the preaching of Krishna consciousness as a troop movement. We think of the word movement, but it always has a military connotation to it when you think of the word movement, troop movements. And Prabhupada loved this concept. That's why it was like he was informing us of his latest encampment. There was a wherever he was, it would have camp. And when you think about that, it's very unusual and wonderful at the same time. I remember I was on the roof of the Old Delhi Temple cooking chapatis for Prabhupada with Lakshmimani on Mataji. And she was actually, admittedly, actress, so she was doing the cooking. I was rolling the chapatis and making the chapatis and bringing them into Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was in this, like, wood shack on the roof of this temple in New Delhi. And it had, like, a canvas door to it. And I remember walking in, Prabhupada wanted puffed up chapatis. Walking in and Prabhupada's just alone there, just eating. And I bring in a chapati and he just, very grave. And with the canvas door and with the camp, this and that, I was thinking that I was envisioning Prabhupada as like the greatest military general. If you think of these scenes of MacArthur and Patton and on the other side in World War II, Rommel, who went across the sands of the Saharas, the Sahara Desert, and they'd be strategizing in these tents with the canvas doors and the desert winds blowing through, and they were nothing to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was on a military campaign he was fighting the one-quarter energy of the Lord, Maya Devi. And he was trying to save souls, and he was on the greatest war the world's ever seen, really. He's the greatest of all military commanders. So it's very natural that he would look at this like that, like a great military campaign. And everything about the word movement Prabhupada liked. In fact, he liked movement within the movement. If you don't mind, I'm going to give a few more examples. I'm sorry that I'm also involved with them, but it's all about Prabhupada here. I was also on a bus, one of the first buses. There were Radha Damodar buses, and there was another bus run by one Rupa Nuga Swami. And we went all up and down the East Coast of America and going to the universities. And in 1973, we went to New Vrindavan, and Srila Prabhupada was there. We went to his house in Bahumavan, and Prabhupada wanted to come on our bus. He very, very much wanted that. And he walked up and gave him Charanamrita. The bus was set up as a temple, and I was the pujari for the Gaudiya Thai. And Prabhupada just seemed excited to be on the bus, and he looked at everything in great detail in the temple room, then walked over the wheel well on the left, saw the shower on the right, which he smiled at. But the thing that excited him the most, he went back into the kitchen, and we used to cook what we called then chipuris. I don't even know if you have chapuris anymore. It was a combination of a chapati and a puri. And we would cook that at 60 miles an hour, you know, and with the ghee moving back and forth. But the thing that Prabhupada liked the most, which, I mean, talk about interesting details, we had these jars of spices. And naturally, you couldn't just keep them on the shelf, they'd fall off when we're driving. So we had taken the tops off, and we had screwed them into the underside of the shelf so that we would screw in. And Prabhupada was just looking at that. And he really, that was what he liked the most. And I think he said, American ingenuity. The fact that we were engaged in action, a movement, that was the thing that excited Prabhupada the most. And just another example, it's very interesting that about 3 years later, I was on a boat on the Ganges. We had turned a boat, it's called a jolly boat, it's a hay boat. It was called Yatai Padakamalam, and Prabhupada came aboard that boat, and I was the pujari on that boat, and he appreciated that very much, and just to show the mercy he gave, we would go out from village to village along the Ganges and give the villagers the opportunity to have darshan of Gaudiya Thai. Those deities are still in Mayapur. They go on parikram. And the villagers would come on, they'd dump mangoes and kilos of rice and, you know, in front of the deities. And so certain parts of the Ganges are very, very wide. In fact, certain parts you can barely see the shore line as you're going down toward the Sundarbans of Calcutta. And so we had left at the hurricane season. Right after the Mayapur Festival in April starts the hurricane season. And right after Ram Nomi, it just kind of starts. And the way it works is that if you are out there on the open water and the hurricane's coming, you see a strip of black on the horizon. And when you see that strip of black, you know you're in trouble if you're not near the shore. We were nowhere near the shore. So what happened is that I was addressing the deities, downstairs in his boat. We had Muslim Majis, the Muslim boatmen, and the sail was out. There's no motor on this thing, the sail. And I didn't know what was happening. I was behind the curtain and addressing the deed, and suddenly the boat's rocking, and the temperature went down 10 degrees in a few seconds, and suddenly the boat just goes absolutely still, and then it hit. And it hit so hard that the boat was starting to surf on these waves, and there were brahmacharis, you know, in the temple room, and just kind of holding on. And I remember I reached back to get some necklace or something, and was trying to hold these. And then I looked back, and Nityananda Prabhu was gone. He was gone. It was just Mahaprabhu there. And what had happened is he had flown out the curtain and landed on the lap of a brahmachari. And finally, anyway, one of the majis took a, you know, they have these vegetable knives, you know, you cook, you cut the subjects on. So he broke it off, put it in his teeth, and climbed up the mast, because you can't keep a sail up in a storm, you know, you have to let it down. So he finally broke the rope, and it... So, later, this is all to illustrate something. the sannyasi, who was quite a good captain of our ship, went to talk to Srila Prabhupada about this. That, Prabhupada, do you feel we may have made a great offense to the deities? Prabhupada was very grave. And he explained what happened. The deity flew out, and he said, oh, you were on the boat. Said, yes. Well, you were preaching on the boat. Yes. His attention went to that. And he said, oh, who's the deity? He said, Nityananda Prabhu. He said, oh, Nityananda, he's a very controversial character. You know, as you read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nityananda Prabhu is a very wonderful, amazing personality who has amazing lila, and he is a unique personality. So, sorry for the long-winded story, but the concept was that Prabhupada gave us special mercy because we were moving in the movement. There was action taking place. And when I think of religion, I think of a static situation. There is an exchange happening, but it is more the boldness of saving the souls, and that may not be as prevalent. And that was always the topmost thing on Srila Prabhupada's mind. I think that is the way to really attain to that is one step toward attaining to Krishna consciousness, is to look at ourselves. We're coming here every weekend, but many pious people are coming to churches all over every weekend. Is there a difference? Search our own hearts and see, is this different? Is this the Hare Krishna religion, or is it the Hare Krishna movement, and where do I stand in this? It's a useful meditation, that's all. But I think for me, at least, if I can try to among my ocean of faults if I can, for a few moments, find myself in the movement, try to get in the movement, then I feel that I'm getting closer to Krishna consciousness. So that's the first, and it has everything to do with the mercy of the guru also. And it's the second element, I think, to get us closer to the mercy of the guru and to our Krishna consciousness is to associate with the with kind of the topmost manifestation of the personality of Godhead, and that is, of course, in my view, Srila Prabhupada's books. It's not my opinion, it is, I think, was stressed by Srila Prabhupada endless times, and so it's, I was thinking of actually, I didn't do it, but of bringing a set of Srimad Bhagavatams out here, and I'm sorry I didn't do it, but at this point I was going to ask everyone to think about taking a set of Bhagavatams, because I can tell one last story, and I'll try to make it quick, that I had seen, I kind of had bothered Srila Prabhupada when I had first, I spoke with him a few times, I had that opportunity. The first time was, I had asked to be a doctor, and Ayurvedic doctor, and he didn't like that idea very much. I felt I was bothering him with it, really, especially on reflection. He was very merciful, though, and he picked up a book and said, just work with my books and be a spiritual doctor. So that kind of led me toward the idea that the books are very important. And the last time I spoke,